It is Tuesday, May 15th, 2012. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. The June Arts Festival in Bentonville is May 31st to June 30th. The June Festival includes public art installations, visual art shows, gallery walks, live music, culinary events, theater performances, hands-on kids art programs, and more. Information is available at downtownbentonville.org or 254-0254.
In a few minutes on Ozark, Senator Mark Pryor on the future of the A-10 aircrafts at the 188th Fighter Wing in Fort Smith, and John Brummett talks to Roby Brock of TalkBusiness.net about Arkansas and same-sex marriage.
Also ahead, a preview of one of the four plays in progress that will be featured at this weekend's New Play Festival in Fayetteville. And our birdman Joe Neal lets us listen in on some tree swallows east of Rogers.
First, the May primary for the 2012 election isn't even over yet, but Arkansas's 2014 election took an unexpected turn yesterday. Arkansas's retiring 4th District Congressman Mike Ross says he will not seek the Democratic nomination for governor in 2014. The longtime congressman had been expected to be a top challenger for his party's nomination to replace a term-limited Governor Mike Beebe. Roby Brock with TalkBusiness.net says that the announcement came as a surprise since Congressman Ross was considered one of the heavyweights in the race.
He and Dustin McDaniel were kind of the two 800-pound gorillas in the room in that primary. So his exit makes Dustin McDaniel, the state's attorney general, really the de facto presumptive front runner at this point. But I do think you'll see other folks get in this race now.
Congressman Ross says he will instead take a top-level job with Little Rock-based Southwest Power Pool.
The collective of artists, commonly known as the Fayetteville Underground, will be in a new downtown location soon. Yesterday, the Fayetteville Advertising and Promotions Commission awarded the group $55,000 to help the artists move into space at the corner of Mountain and Block Streets. Hank Kaminsky, a sculptor and member of the group's steering committee, says the A&P's decision indicates that the commission realizes the economic importance of the arts.
And the fact that we were so successful with First Thursday and that people really noticed that we weren't there when we left, A&P, is thinking in the right direction. You know, one of the foundational clauses in their mandate is that their support for the arts, and it's not just advertising and promotion. It's also the arts are a significant factor.
The group of artists had been seeking a new space since losing a lease at their old location at East Square Plaza on the Fayetteville Square. The A&P Commission yesterday handed out more than $159,000 to 18 different groups. The $55,000 for the Fayetteville Underground was the highest amount awarded.
Northwest Arkansas Community College is working with a new logo. The school revealed the new design and a new tagline last night during a Board of Trustees meeting. The new emblem features a tree inside two circles, and the tagline, Maximize Potential, Exceed Expectations. Stephen Hines, the Executive Director of Public Relations and Marketing at NWACC, says the new logo was created as a team effort.
There were focus groups that were formed. There was a presentation to a graphics design class. Out of that, there were a number of possible logos and taglines that were given to us. We narrowed those down to two. And at that point, we did a survey not only with all of the various stakeholders who had been part of the focus groups, but then we opened it up to the entire campus, to all students, faculty, and staff.
Gas prices in Arkansas are dropping. The average gallon of gas has fallen nearly 30 cents in the past month to $3.46. Mike Wright, a spokesman for the AAA Auto Club, says there are many reasons for the decrease in price, including less tension in the Middle East.
There's a lot of the tensions associated with what's going on in the Middle East that has been moderated in recent weeks, and I think that is one of the major factors that we're seeing causing the price of crude to go down and consequently the price of gasoline to go down as well.
Mike Wright says even though gasoline is in higher demand in the summer, there's no guarantee prices will go back up.
Tanya Sharp, the principal at Elm Tree Elementary School in Bentonville, has been named an Arkansas Master Principal. She is now one of only 21 principals in the state of Arkansas to receive the award. It was presented yesterday by the State Board of Education. There were only four principals in the state chosen for the distinction for the 2011-2012 year. Bentonville Public Schools recently named Tanya Sharp as the new Director of Special Services. She'll begin her new administrative position on July 1st.
The Arkansas Razorback baseball team will try to break a slump tonight in North Little Rock when the team meets Louisiana Tech at Dickey Stevens Park. The Razorbacks have fallen to under 500 in SEC play and will return to conference play for three games at Tennessee beginning Thursday. The Razorbacks will then play in the SEC conference tournament in Hoover, Alabama next week.
This is Ozarks at Large. Last week, members of Arkansas's congressional delegation met with Defense Secretary Leon Panetta to discuss the future of the A-10 aircraft at the 188th Fighter Wing at Fort Smith. The meeting took place inside Senator Mark Pryor's office, and with me on the phone is Senator Pryor. Welcome back to Ozarks at Large.
Thank you for having me.
Do you now, after the meeting between the Secretary and you and your colleagues from both chambers, do you have any more of a feel for what the future of the A-10s might be in Fort Smith?
Well, I would say that the meeting was very constructive. He listened. He's actually been through a BRAC closure before when he was in the Congress. He represented Fort Ord out in California. So he was kind of sympathetic with us in terms of feeling our pain. But we just don't know yet what they're going to do. The Air Force has laid out this budget. They want to take the A-10s. They want to leave a few in the Air National Guard and leave a few in the active duty and send some to the boneyard. So the problem is that if you want to save money, and that's what this is supposedly all about, if you want to save money and have a leaner and more lethal military, you should keep the 188 because it is the most cost-effective, the most efficient unit in the whole system. So their proposal does not really make sense from that standpoint. And one of the things that we made very clear to him is we said, look, we understand that every congressman and senator in Washington comes to you and says, go ahead and cut, just don't cut us, you know. And we said, we don't want to be in that position. We think that we have very sound military reasons why you should not cut the 188. So he listened, no commitments in terms of actions on his part, but he definitely listened, and I think he has a better understanding of the importance of the 188 now.
I imagine some of the frustration that people surrounding this issue feel is the lack of knowledge of a timeline. Any idea when we might know more?
Well, this is a budget. This isn't a BRAC. In a BRAC process, the base realignment and closure process, you usually get a full year, and there's a commission set up, and they're having hearings and getting input from all over the country. This is not the situation we're in right now. The situation we're in right now is this basically is a budget, so we're on the congressional timeline for the budget. We all know that it's been very difficult to pass a budget in recent years, not just the last 3 years, but in the last 10 years. I think we've gone 5 years without a budget. So it's a little hard to know, but, you know, at some point this year we're going to have to make this decision. And hopefully the decision will be that the 188th will be spared and, you know, that Fort Smith keeps its airplanes. But we just don't have any guarantees of that right now.
There are more than 60,000 Arkansans who are keeping their eyes peeled on interest rates for student loans that could have a jump before the summer is out.
67,000 Arkansans have student loans or could, you know, potentially have student loans this fall. There's about $1 trillion out in student loans right now. 94% of the students who earn a bachelor's degree now have to borrow money to get their higher education. Back in 1993, it was 45%. So that tells you, you know, how much more people rely on these right now. So we're discussing this on the Senate floor. We're trying to work it out. I think both parties, Democrats and Republicans, agree that we should try to keep the rate lower, keep it at the 3.4%, and not let it go back up to the 6.8%. The question is how to pay for it, and that's what's being worked out. Hopefully being worked out on the floor right now. But, you know, it's very important. 45% of all the U of A grads had debt when they graduated, and the average there is $21,000 in debt. So this is important. It's a kitchen table issue for young people. Of course, we have a higher unemployment rate for young people right now. We all know that. That's all been in the press. So we don't need to pile on with increased interest rates on the student debt.
You mentioned a kitchen table issue. There's about $1 trillion in student loans out there. Could this have ramifications beyond just the kitchen table and the greater economy as a whole?
I think it does. I think that we want, as a matter of national policy and priority, we want people to get higher education. We want them to finish high school and go on and get college degree, a two-year degree, four-year degree, or some advanced degree. We need that for America to be competitive. But at the same time, you're right, you have so many of these loans out there, about $1 trillion out there right now. You can measure this in the financial markets. I mean, this is a big deal. This is, you know, last year I think it was, for the first time ever, student loan debt surpassed credit card debt in our economy. So this is a big deal. And the fact that we've gone through this very hard recession has kind of highlighted this, because people are having trouble finding jobs, and you know, trying to get people to college, it's hard enough financially right now. A lot of them just won't be able to go unless they can afford the student loans. So it's all kind of coming to a head right now, but hopefully we can work this out this week in the Senate, and I'm hoping we can have some good news.
There does seem to be a bit of a reprieve for some of the smaller post offices in Arkansas that had been on the list for closure, at least a temporary reprieve.
Yes, and this is, again, I think good news. Here, we passed something in the Senate 2-3 weeks ago on postal reform. This goes to show you that if we work together in Washington, we can actually get a lot of good things done. This bill in the Senate started out as a pretty small bill. There was a couple senators working on it. It fairly quickly grew into a good, solid, bipartisan bill. Ended up getting a very big bipartisan vote in the Senate. It doesn't fix every single problem for the post office, but it does get them on the road to financial stability. And part of this was to extend the moratorium. This is actually one of my provisions in the bill, to extend the moratorium on post office closures. And right after we passed that, the Postal Service sat down. It took them a week or so, 10 days maybe. They came out with a plan that they would keep these very small rural post offices open, but what they would do is they'd reduce their hours. And I think that's actually not a bad compromise. It allows the Postal Service to stay in that community. It's, in some cases, it'll only be 2 hours a day, but it does keep Saturday delivery. And so they'll be open 2, 4, 6 hours a day, or of course, the normal 8 hours a day. And the Postal Service has already put out a list on what we're trying to do there. That move right there by the Postal Service saves $500 million a year. So this is not chump change. This really will help their bottom line, but it also keeps the post offices open.
Compromise.
I know. It's amazing. There again, you know, if we work together, we can get it done.
Finally, over the last 9 days, gay marriage has been in the headlines. First, the vice president on Meet the Press, then the election vote in North Carolina, then the president in the exclusive, and GOP nominee or presumptive nominee Mitt Romney saying that he is for the establishment of a federal amendment that would establish marriage between one man and one woman. Do you think this is an issue that's going to be talked about all through November?
My guess is it will. I think both sides see it as an issue that energizes their so-called base, and I think that it will be a political issue throughout the course of this year. I'm not sure that the Congress is going to do anything, and I'm not sure really what all the president will do over the next 4 years, to, you know, whoever gets elected. That's not very clear at this point, but I think both are trying to stake out where they are personally. They're not really going into a lot of detail on what they're going to propose or how they're going to act on their personal beliefs. But, you know, we tried the marriage amendment before. It's failed. It's really hard to amend the Constitution, and marriage has always been a state issue. We have a federal law on the books with that definition. I'm not sure that anybody's going to be able to pass an amendment on that. So my guess is that it will be a political issue this year and this fall, and both sides kind of like the issue because they think it energizes their voters, and we'll just see what happens.
Senator Mark Pryor, thank you very much for your time.
You bet. Thank you.
In the latest Talk Business Hendricks College poll, likely voters in Arkansas's 4th District, a region that includes much of southern Arkansas and parts of northwest Arkansas, were asked about preferences in the May primary. We reported on those numbers yesterday. But voters were also asked their opinions about same-sex marriage. In the 4th District, just 26% of 418 self-identified Democrats said they supported same-sex marriage, while 69% said they were opposed. As for the 437 likely Republican voters, a mere 6% said they supported same-sex marriage, while 92% were opposed. Roby Brock of TalkBusiness.net recently asked John Brummett, the political columnist with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, about the findings and how President Obama's recent comments about gay marriage play out in Arkansas.
All right, John, the president reversed previous position and said he now supports gay marriage. What is the political calculation in this? Is it to get Mitt Romney and the GOP off of an economic message and into some social issues, or is there some sort of other motive?
I think the way that the president had hemmed and hawed on that had just got to the point that it was untenable. He had to go ahead and say what he believed. You know, he kept saying that he was evolving. Well, evolving means you're getting to a certain position. He wasn't, everybody knew where he was, and he looked like he was sort of Romney-esque in trying to have it both ways. The calculation is, I think it won't hurt him that much, and it does possibly lead to more of a social issue discussion than an economic discussion. So I think there's some calculus to it, but I think it's just something he felt like he had to do. It was time, and it was probably going to have to be addressed in the platform at the convention, so you might as well go ahead and say it.
Well, John, we polled 4th District Democrats and Republicans, as you know, on the subject, and there's clearly very little interest in changing the state's constitution on this matter. As predictable as the opposition to gay marriage may have been, I mean, we're in a very culturally conservative state. Could you have predicted this level of opposition from both parties?
Your poll showing that Republican voters in South Arkansas oppose gay marriage 6-92. I don't know that I've ever seen a figure like that. And everybody knew it would be overwhelmingly opposed, but 6-92, that's unheard of. You must have had some gay people saying they opposed themselves to get a figure of 6-92. And then the Democrats, the president's own party, when you get south of Little Rock, 26%, I believe your poll shows, favorite, 69% against. I guess that number is a little more predictable, but it's still a rout. It's overwhelming. People wonder why I would write a column worrying that this crank from Tennessee is going to get a lot of Democratic primary votes for president. Well, look here. Among the president's own party, south of Little Rock, 70% in his own party, 69, are opposed to something he announced famously and to great fanfare just 2 or 3 days before. I got to think, if those folks don't go vote in the Republican congressional primary, as many of them will, they're going to go to the ballot and vote against President Obama. I see a West Virginia-type vote, anti-Obama vote, possibly occurring in Arkansas that is exacerbated by this issue. The bottom line, Arkansas is a conservative state, famously behind the curve of history, wrong side of history on race, famously, and we're way behind. The gay rights movement is strong. Gallup shows nationwide that most Americans now favor gay marriage, but look in South Arkansas, regardless of party, don't like it. So it's we are strongly, deeply disconnected from the curve of history and the rest of the country on this issue.
John Brummett is a political columnist for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Roby Brock, publisher of TalkBusiness.net. Support for TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com and Bank of the Ozarks. More information at BankOzarks.com and Verizon, offering a wide selection of productivity-enhancing tablets for small business, including the Apple iPad. More information at a Verizon Communications store near you or online at VZW.com/smallbusiness and CEG Partners, using empirical data to better understand your customers' experiences and their loyalties. More information at CEGPartners.com.
Ahead on Ozarks, Joe Neal explains the difference between barn swallows and tree swallows, allowing the birds to help him out with his report.
Tree swallows are not as well known here. They are brilliant blue on top, brilliant white on the bottom. Over the years, I've seen them nesting in dead trees, standing out in a lake, and occasionally in a small bird box on the edge of a pond.
Birds from the east side of Rogers, plus a preview of this weekend's new play festival in Fayetteville, still to come on Ozarks at Large.
150 years ago, Confederate Colonel William L. Jeffers' Independent Cavalry Command was reported camped at Chalk Bluff on the St. Francis River in northeast Arkansas, operating against Unionists in the area. Colonel Edward Daniels of the 1st Wisconsin Cavalry saw Jeffers as a threat to his troops at Cape Girardeau, Missouri, and mounted an expedition against him. Arriving at Chalk Bluff on May 15, 1862, two privates swam across the St. Francis and seized the ferry boat, which the Yankees used to transport their men to Arkansas, trading fire with Jeffers' Confederates the entire time. The Union cavalrymen, fighting dismounted, drove the rebels from the field. The 1st Wisconsin suffered 3 killed and 6 wounded, while the Confederates lost 11 killed and 17 injured in the first of many skirmishes that would be fought at Chalk Bluff during the Civil War. To learn more about Arkansas history and the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War, visit ArkansasCivilWar150.com. The Arkansas Civil War Sesquicentennial Commission is an agency of the Department of Arkansas Heritage. I'm Mark Crist.
In the summer of 2010, the first Wine, Women, and Song performance in Fort Smith left many wondering who enjoyed the evening more, the audience or the four performers who sang selections from Broadway, Tin Pan Alley, the American Songbook, and more. It was agreed the night was a grand time, so now, in late spring 2012, a second Wine, Women, and Song concert is set for tomorrow night at 7:30 at 2nd Street Live Performing and Visual Arts Center in downtown Fort Smith. Elizabeth Moman is one of the four women who will be on stage tomorrow. She's also the head of the music department at the University of Arkansas, Fort Smith, and with me on the phone from her office in Fort Smith. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you. I trust the set list for tomorrow night's concert is set.
It is, indeed.
And if I recall correctly, when I talked to you in 2010, you were somewhat, you know, mysterious about what people might hear. You didn't want to give away too much.
Well, I think that was because we were so out of our box and out of our element. We were a little apprehensive about it, but we got on stage and we had a blast. And we think the audience did too.
And you say you a little out of your box, a little out of what you're used to. That's because the four of you are all classically trained. Is that correct?
That is correct. All four of us are classical singers by day.
So,
and we're doing something very different tonight.
Tomorrow night, yes. So how did this come about that you would all collectively, the four of you, move out of your comfort zone?
I've had this idea for a long, long time, and it's just we all enjoy all types of music, but we stay in our own element, our comfort zone, which is the classical music. And I said, you know, we're all beginning to age a little bit, and it's time to spread our wings and fly and do some other things. So here we are.
Tell me about the three women who perform with you.
Well, we have some wonderful singers. We have Dr. Catherine White. She is a member of our voice faculty here. And Nancy Mathis, who also is on our faculty. And last time, we had Liz Madden with us, who was a veteran Broadway and a very, very well-known Irish singer. But Liz moved away, and we miss her terribly. But we brought in someone this year who is a Broadway singer and lives in Memphis, Tennessee at the current time, and her name is Rachel Black.
Mm-hmm.
And she is fabulous. This voice is just amazing. She and Dr. White went to school together at the University of Kentucky.
Hmm.
So we have a great, great lineup. Dr. White and Rachel are both mezzos, and Nancy and I are both sopranos. So we have some highs and have some low, but we mix it up. The highs now are singing low, and the lows are singing high.
You know, if you look at your collective resumes, there are performances, operatic roles, performances with symphonies. And what is different physically for you? I know you can only speak for yourself and perhaps not your three colleagues. What is different for you physically singing, say, Broadway or Motown or jazz than opera or with a symphony?
I think it's just where you're using your voice. And I'll have to speak personally here. And some of these songs, I am way below middle C, down to, I think, a low E at one point. So it's one of my colleagues turned to me and she said, "Well, Miss Coloratura, you've got some low notes." And I said, "Yes, I have to on this song." So it's just a different area of the voice that we have to think about things a little differently and how we approach them.
I imagine most of you are, if not perfectionists, close to it. You have to almost be to have a career in music. So that would seem to make the roll-up, the rehearsals, just a bit stressful. I know they were for you the first time in 2010. Were they a little bit more relaxed this time?
We still have that element of look at what's on the page, read that rhythm, and then we have to learn it that way, and then we have to step back and go, now we have to relax and have fun and present this in the right style, which means you may not take that dotted quarter and an eighth so strict, and you have to loosen the reins of the rhythm a little bit and have bring the style, the correct style, into the music. But I guarantee you, we all approached it from our classical sense, learn the notes, learn the rhythms, and then we have to come back and do it a little differently.
Did you and Dr. White and Ms. Mathis and Ms. Black, did you all come with songs that you each were hoping that would be performed?
Oh, yes. We got together and thought, we think of the ensemble pieces first, and we look at our voices and think, what will work for us well as a group? And we picked those, and I think we have 8 or 9 ensemble pieces. And then we all have solos that we wanted to bring to the table and do, and we do. We're doing 2 or 3 solos a piece.
Can you give us just a hint of 1 or 2 songs we might hear tomorrow night?
You bet. One of the ones that I just have grown to love is Too Darn Hot from Kiss Me Kate by Cole Porter. Mm-hmm. Just fabulous song, and it fits well. You know, it's a easy, very, very upbeat piece. Kay White is singing I'm a Stranger Here Myself, a Kurt Vile piece that is just outstanding. Rachel's doing an Adele piece, Rolling in the Deep.
Oh, my.
Yes, yeah, so we've got, and I'm doing it at last, an Etta James piece. So we've got Nancy doing Ain't Misbehaving. So we've got the whole mix, and then some of the ensemble pieces include You Don't Own Me, Chain of Fools. So we've got, it's all over the map in terms of what we've got.
And the net proceeds benefit the Foundation Music Scholarship Fund at University of Arkansas Fort Smith.
Yes, and I guess we're getting out of our box for a worthy cause. At least 90% of our students in the music department are on some type of scholarship, and without assistance, many of them would not be able to attend college. And this the money, the proceeds go to that fund to help get those students in college and put out some wonderful musicians in the world.
Well, it's 7:30 tomorrow night at Second Street Live. That's on Second Street. Tickets just
$10. Yes. $10 at the door, and it should be a great night of fun. We promise that we're going to laugh, and so we hope we make the audience laugh as well.
Well, let's see. You're not acting, so I don't tell you break a leg. What, I guess just have a great
toy,
show?
Toy means good luck, 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 luck.
Oh, well, there. I'll say that then.
thank you so much.
And thank you so much for your time.
I appreciate it.
There are swallows, then there are swallows. One flock prefers human habitat, the other wilderness. Next, Joe Neal vividly illustrates the differences.
Years ago, I knew an old farmer down at Boonville who hated barn swallows. It wasn't because he especially hated birds. It was because he'd finally made enough money to buy a new tractor that he proudly parked in his freshly painted barn. About the time the new tractor is snug in the barn, here come barn swallows looking for a place to nest. They plaster mud nests on the rafters, unfortunately, above the new tractor. I guess you know what happens next. Bye-bye, barn swallow nest, eggs and all. I recount this story because there's no such problem with tree swallows. I'm up on Beaver Lake, east of Rogers, at the Arkansas Game and Fish Nursery Pond. The main business here is raising fish for release in the lake. But another purpose is to expand opportunities for wildlife, like swallows and bluebirds, and wildlife viewing for us. Game and Fish has partnered with the Army Corps of Engineers to provide housing for tree swallows. 25 boxes line the big pond, filled with tree swallows and some eastern bluebirds. It's a busy place. They don't have to worry about my old farmer friend. We're all used to seeing barn swallows sweeping low over big hay fields as they seek insects. And maybe you've also noticed cliff swallows that attach bottle-shaped mud nests under bridges. Tree swallows are not as well known here. They are brilliant blue on top, brilliant white on the bottom. Over the years, I've seen them nesting in dead trees, standing out in a lake, and occasionally in a small bird box on the edge of a pond. Like I said, the nursery pond is a busy place. There were leopard frogs in the shallows of the pond, plus lots of other birds nearby. The nesting tree swallow population at Beaver Nursery Pond is the largest I know about in northwest Arkansas. There are often great blue herons and wood ducks to see, too. You don't need special permission to visit the place. If you go there soon, you can catch the big tree swallow nesting show. It's free and open to the birds, and for us, too.
Joe Neal is co-author of Arkansas Birds, published by the University of Arkansas Press. His latest book, In the Province of Birds, a Western Arkansas Memoir, is published by Half Acre Press.
The Washington Regional Hospice Garden Party, Southern Soiree, is Saturday, June 17th at 7 p.m. This fundraising celebration will be held at the Fayetteville home of Sylvia and Tommy Boyer. Sponsorships are available now. 444-9888 for tickets or wregional.com/garden-party for more information.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Wayne Bell. He writes the column Culture Club at FayettevilleFlyer.com. Wayne, usually you're talking movies or music or things
that require money.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there is a lot of movies coming out this summer that people are excited about. Dark Knight and what's that? Promiscuous? Prometheus or whatever?
Prometheus.
Whatever.
Somehow tied into the Alien storyline, right?
I don't know. But you take four people, you make a night of it, and you're looking at, you know, easily $70-$80.
Right.
So it's expensive. But there are some things that you can do around Fayetteville this summer for entertainment that are relatively cheap or free.
Right.
So one big one that I'm always excited about, they do a smaller one around Christmas, but they do the big one in the spring every year. And this is the second year, but last year's had such good response, as did the Christmas one. And that's the Block Street Party, which is coming up this Sunday.
Right. And Block Street turns into one
carnival.
Right.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, last year, it's really spearheaded by Hannah Withers from Little Bread Company. And so a lot of her supporters, a lot of Block Street business supporters come out, and it's a huge day. Last year, I know they were expecting a couple hundred, and they had just a ton of people.
It helped that last year's weather here, mm-hmm. it was the same day as the Joplin Trail, but the weather here was really nice.
Right. And I hope it's that way again this year. They have hot air balloons and food vendors and beer gardens and concerts, and all the stores are open with specials, and it's really family friendly. And so it's a really good activity to take your kids to, or if you're couples, it's just fun. You can, you know, kill a couple of hours, and it's this upcoming Sunday afternoon. Other activities that I always say, it's funny. I was telling somebody the other day, she was saying, what can I do with an afternoon? I said, go to Wilson Park. We have these great parks in Fayetteville, Gully and Wilson.
And let me throw out Murphy Park in Springdale.
Okay.
Feed the ducks.
But Wilson has the castle, and, you know, it's really fun, and it's beautiful even just to gaze at the houses around there. And Gully Park has a lot of open land, so it's really a great, you know, time of the year to go there, because soon it's going to get so ungodly hot. Do you have some favorites?
I do. I think a great way to spend a day, if you haven't done this yet, or even if it's been a while, is to go to the Fort Smith Historic Site. Go to Judge Parker's courtroom, the gallows where the executions took place. You can see the basis for Charles Portis, sure. But the historic site in downtown Fort Smith is a great place to spend a day. A lot of history there. I think the trails around Crystal Bridges, if you haven't
that, I mean, that's
beautiful,
a given. And
gorgeous.
Crystal Bridges and themselves.
Crystal Bridges itself,
I mean, they
right.
had the new exhibit.
Speaking of, now the Hudson River is a nominal charge.
There is a nominal charge, but for the sitting gallery, you know, the main one, it's free. And the other one is well worth, you know, a few dollars to see that much art. And they have great food and the library. And there's just so much to do up at Crystal Bridges. So that's, of course, a great activity.
And it may not be as often in the summer, but for 9 months of the year, check the University of Arkansas Music Department's website. Mm-hmm. There are recitals and concerts in Celeboil Smith throughout the year, and
right.
most of them are free.
Yeah, and I think they do some summer stuff as well.
They do. Well, there is the KUAF Summer Chamber Music Series that will be beginning soon. Those are free, some of them at Celeboil, some of them at St. Paul's. So. And there's something about chamber music in the summer. You just mm-hmm. kind of go in shorts or jeans or whatever. And
right. My last favorite activity is on a Thursday, Friday, or Saturday night, about 9 o'clock, just go sit on the stairs in front of Walton Arts Center and just plan to take a book for a few hours and just watch the crazy come out.
I think that's a wonderful
idea.
It's a
good idea at the summer. You get to see the protester or
the buskers.
Oh, yeah. And so, you know, there's a whole lot of crazy that comes out. And a lot of locals come out, especially in the summer, because they don't want to deal with the crowds in the fall and spring with the university. So, you know, that's... people watching in this town is really
and there are a lot of free music
unmatched.
A lot of free music series. Sodom Springs will be doing mm-hmm. theirs again the second Saturday. You've got Village on the Creeks doing one, Gully Park. So there are a lot of free music festivals, and they kind of happen to where there's one on Saturday, one on Thursday, one on Friday, and you can kind of bounce around. And then I'm also going to say that the cheapest ticket for Northwest Arkansas Naturals games is pretty reasonable. You can go in and have a good time.
Even the food's pretty reasonable,
yeah.
too.
And there's a kid zone where inflatable things where the kids can have fun.
Right.
So.
And, of course, nothing beats the farmer's market.
Right. Any
free music.
Right. Absolutely.
And, I can't speak to some of the others, but Fayetteville with the music. And
Bentonville has a real good farmer's market scene going.
Yeah, it's great.
So you can spend not much and still have a good time.
Not much and get a lot out of it.
That's right.
Yep.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you.
Wayne Bell writes the column Culture Club for FayettevilleFlyer.com.
Next time on the TED Radio Hour. The power of crowds.
Media is increasingly more a site of coordination because groups that see or hear or watch or listen to something can now gather around and talk to each other as well.
What is the true potential of 21st century collaboration? Find out next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour can be heard Saturday at noon on KUAF. It's part of our new Saturday afternoon lineup. You can see the program schedules for all of KUAF stations at KUAF.com. This weekend, Theater Squared will let curious people see four plays in progress as part of the annual New Play Festival. Sunday, each of the playwrights participated in a forum at the Fayetteville Public Library that I moderated. This week, we'll hear highlights from each of the playwrights. Clenisha Dillon Sibley's script, Uprooted, will be the first play to be presented. A reading of the script will be Friday night at 7 at Nadine Baum Studios in Fayetteville. The play is about long-separated siblings who come back to their Mississippi hometown for their mother's funeral. I asked Clenisha, who is an assistant professor of drama at the University of Arkansas, about the process she's undertaken to work on this new play.
Clenisha, how long have you been with Uprooted, your play?
Almost a year, I think. It's been about a year.
It's about family.
It's about family.
Coming back.
Yes, for a funeral. And it's a play I've been wanting to... I like writing plays about family, And I've been wanting to deal with the return for the funeral activities for a while. And it's something that we've heard a lot. And every now and then I want to write the story that everybody knows and see how I might make it my own. So that was kind of what led me to write the play. One of the things. I had many inspirations for it. The relationship between the siblings. There are three sisters and a brother. I don't have a brother. I'm one of three sisters, and I like exploring the personalities between the three, and it's also a Southern play. Their home is Mississippi, and they're returning to Mississippi for the funeral, and I am from Mississippi. So that's something that I know very well, and I love to write about Mississippi. I love to write about families.
Well, now let me ask you. You have two sisters.
Yes, yes.
There are three sisters in the play.
Yes.
You grew up in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. You've set the play in Mississippi. Have you talked to your sisters about and said, you know, this is fiction or this is not fiction?
It's coming. That conversation is coming. Because I need them to understand that if anything, they should feel like, the language. I'm inspired by their language, the events past and present are very different. I've not and I'm don't want to. I hate to say this. I have not buried my mother, and so that's also one of my kind of greatest fears. So I guess exploring that idea was very interesting because. It's kind of the one thing that you don't care to think about that, and so I don't feel like it was closely related to the way it would be. You know, I didn't personalize it in that way, but there are these Southern things that you know are associated with how we bury our family, and all of the food, as if all of the food is going to make the grief go away. Mm-hmm. And and some of the gossipy things that sort of find their way into the mourning process. So
and it's a compact time when you come back for a funeral. I mean, four days, a lot can be compressed and
yes, very much so. And it takes with a flashback or these scenes that happened like 3 months ago. For the most part, the play takes place on the day of the wake, which is before the funeral. And so, and I don't think you asked me this question, but about inspirations and what inspired it.
I was going to.
But
so.
Were you?
Yes.
I'll just say this too. One of the things I get. My playwright's anxieties are having something that inspires me too much. I like to kind of have these little different things instead of like just one big thing. But the one big thing that did sort of get me thinking about some of the dramatic tensions of the play was this real life situation between this actor who did channel these past molestation issues. And brought that forward, you know, when she received this award for playing this character who was really good in a molestation situation, and they wanted to know how were you able to play that role? And it was then, in the height of that she said, "Oh, my brother molested me," and the issue involving that with our family was. Why did you say something?
Right.
You know, so it goes back to that old adage that what happens in the family stays in the family. And I wanted to really explore that.
Clanisha Dillon Sibley's script, Uprooted, will be the first play in progress to be read as part of the new play festival sponsored by Theater Squared in Fayetteville this weekend. It will be read Friday night at 7 at Nadine Baum Studios. On Sunday afternoon, all of the playwrights participated in a forum at the Fayetteville Public Library. Tomorrow in Ozarks, we'll hear from Robert Ford about the play he's brought to the festival about a woman who claims she can communicate with dead composers. You can learn more about the festival at theater2.org. That's theater, the number 2, .org.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 15th of May, 2012. It's the birthday of the nonfiction author Laura Hillenbrand, born Fairfax, Virginia, 1967, author of the bestsellers Seabiscuit and Unbroken, a writer who suffers from chronic fatigue syndrome, so she can go for long periods of time without ever being able to leave her home in Washington, D.C. She conducts all of her research by phone and email. Laura Hillenbrand said, "I'm looking for a way out of here. I can't have it physically, so I'm going to have it intellectually." It was a beautiful thing to ride Seabiscuit in my imagination. It's my way of living vicariously. It's the birthday of the man who said, "I think charm is the ability to be truly interested in other people." Richard Avedon, born New York City, 1923, fashion photographer, also did portraits of celebrities and mental patients, carnival workers, war protesters, ordinary working class people. It's the birthday of Lyman Frank Baum, born Chittenango, New York, 1856, moved to Aberdeen, South Dakota when he was 32, opened up a general store called Baum's Bazaar. He was very popular with the kids in the neighborhood. He told stories, smoking a big cigar, also very generous with credit, and his store went bankrupt. So he got a job as an editor for the local paper, published his first book, Mother Goose in Prose, in 1897, collection of stories based on the nursery rhymes, then Father Goose, his book. But it was his novel that came out in 1900, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, that we know him for today. It was a big success. He went on to write 13 more novels based on the Land of Oz. It was on this date, 1869, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Susan B. Anthony formed the National Woman Suffrage Association. There was a movement afoot in favor of the 15th Amendment, granting voting rights to African-American men, but not to women. And the women's suffrage movement was divided over whether to support that bill. Some felt that any advancement in civil rights would eventually help women. The other faction, led by Stanton and Anthony, opposed giving those rights to another group of men who they felt would then have no further interest in advancing the cause of women. So they formed their own national organization and made a team, worked together for 50 years. Susan B. Anthony never married, so she could travel. Stanton could not. She stayed home, raised her kids, did the research, and wrote the speeches. Elizabeth Cady Stanton said, "I am the better writer, she the better critic, and together we have made arguments that have stood unshaken by the storms of 30 long years." Here's a poem for today by Dana Gioia, entitled Pity the Beautiful. Pity the beautiful, the dolls and the dishes, the babes with big daddies granting their wishes. Pity the pretty boys, the hunks and Apollos, the golden lads whom success always follows. The hotties, the knockouts, the tens out of ten, the drop-dead gorgeous, the great leading men. Pity the faded, the bloated, the blousy, the paunchy Adonis whose luck's gone lousy. Pity the gods, no longer divine. Pity the night, the stars lose their shine. A poem by Dana Gioia, Pity the Beautiful, from his book entitled Pity the Beautiful, published by Grey Wolf Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Constant Contact, offering a nationwide series of educational events in support of Small Business Week. Learn more at constantcontact.com/SBW. And by Nook, Simple Touch with Glow Light by Barnes & Noble. Designed for bedtime reading, Glow Light offers paper-like reading with the lights on or off. Available at neighborhood Barnes & Noble stores or Nook.com. Produced by Nick Vetter, written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Support for KUAF comes from Northwest Arkansas Media, publishers of Northwest Arkansas Times, Springdale and Rogers Morning News, Benton County Daily Record, and the Northwest Arkansas edition of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, offering news and stories researched, written, and edited by local journalists. More information is available online at nwaonline.com. And KUAF is supported by Fayetteville Window Washing, offering both residential and commercial cleaning services, as well as power washing, gutter protection, and more. Information is available on the web at fayettevillewindowwashing.com.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Eagleton.
Eagleton? Mm-hmm. Where is Eagleton?
It's north of Mena.
Huh.
Yeah.
I've never heard of Eagleton.
Well, there you go.
Another place to go now.
Your fact for the day.
I appreciate that. The City of Fayetteville Urban Forestry Advisory Board announces a competition for best examples of sustainable landscapes, which will result in a presentation of an award to one residential property and one commercial property. Anyone may nominate a property. Nomination forms and judging criteria can be found at accessfayetteville.org. by then going to Urban Forestry, which is under the Parks and Recreation link. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda. So you did stuff this weekend, yes?
Yes, yes. Let's see. Saturday night, went to the Northwest Arkansas Naturals game against the Springfield Cardinals. Nats lost 3-2.
Bobblehead night, though.
It was George Brett bobblehead night, coincidentally. By the way, today is George Brett's 59th birthday.
Well, there you go.
But apparently, there were people lined up to get the bobbleheads even before the gates opened, almost an hour and a half before first pitch. Yeah,
I guess I don't have any bobbleheads.
I have the one in here.
Right.
And that's Denny Matthews. Okay. Denny Matthews, who is the longtime play-by-play man of the Kansas City Royals. He has been their play-by-play announcer since the Royals became a franchise in 1969.
Yeah, I don't have any, but people seem to like them for whatever reason.
You went to Walton Arts Center Friday night?
I did. I saw the Diavolo Dance Company. I liked it. I liked the second one better than the first act, I think. So apparently I like more pretty traditional style of
really?
Dance. Apparently. That's what I decided.
Okay.
I'm sure there's words for it, but as not a dancer, I don't know them.
Well, you know, I talked with Chisa, a member of the company, on Thursday, and she was talking about all the different big props or instruments they used. Was that on display?
Yeah. Well, the first piece revolved around a cube, and it was really interesting to see how they sort of like took it apart and put it back together, and then the floor kind of came up and down, which was interesting because I can't even dance on a flat floor, let alone a slanted one. The second one had kind of the thing that looks like a ship, the semicircle
that rocks
back and forth,
and so people were being catapulted.
Yeah, actually, that was kind of scary. There were some people like, because they were just jumping off. I mean, they were just launching themselves off the top of it and just, of course, getting caught and safely and all that good stuff. But if you don't really know what's coming, it's kind of a shock, I guess.
And then speaking of big props, Saturday night, completely different sort of thing. You went to the Demolition Derby at Parsons Stadium in Springdale.
I am nothing if not well-rounded, sir.
That's right.
Yes, I'd never been to a Demolition Derby, and I had some friends that wanted to go, and it was a lot of fun. I think KUAF should get me a car. I mean, let me have a go at it.
We'll talk.
Well, they had, like, you know, sponsorships and stuff, so I think, you guys
could research that. Research
that.
Demolition Derby cars, of course, don't have the glass, don't have the mirrors, but you are buckled in, and you do have a helmet.
You do have a helmet.
It's safe.
It was safe.
As safe as ramming cars into each other can be.
Everybody seemed okay.
That's good.
You know, all's well that ends well.
And then Sunday, I was at the Fayetteville Public Library for the New Play Forum. We heard Clinicia Dylan Sibley earlier, and we're going to hear highlights from that throughout the week.
And that's this weekend. I can't believe it's already time for that again.
There's a lot going on this weekend. All right, you and I back together tomorrow.
Yes.
For a new edition of Ozarks at Large. Thanks, Antoinette. Happy George Brett's birthday.
Thanks, Kyle.